I'll read from Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava, the section, from the section called Nomenclature. As is common in Vedic culture, Srila Saraswati Thakur had several names and titles. In childhood, he was known as Bimala Prasad, he who was received as the mercy of Bimala Devi. Bimala Devi is the internal potency of Jagannath, manifested as a form of Durga in his temple at Puri. Gauriyas consider her an expansion of the gopi Bimala, the overseer of Kamyavan forest of Rajamandala. Another significance of this name is that Jagannath's prasada, food remnants, is offered to the deity Bimala, after which it is called Mahaprasad. Only then is it distributed to the public. So just as Jagannath's prasad, mercy, is available only through Bimala Devi and is thus received with enhanced quality, the mercy of Jagannath in the form of Bhakti Siddhanta and Bhakti Vinod is available only from Sri Bimala Prasad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. At age 15, he was awarded the title Sri Siddhanta Saraswati for excellence in Jyotish, astronomy, and astrology. In Vedic astronomy, Siddhanta refers to an established canonical textbook. Saraswati is the goddess presiding over aparavidya, knowledge, particularly that of Shastra pertaining to the material sphere. Sri Siddhanta Saraswati lived up to his appellation by demonstrating divinely inspired erudition in defining principles of Jyotish, even by defying the orthodoxy of that science and shattering its hallowed misconceptions. On another level, the name Siddhanta Saraswati indicates a timeless intrinsic attribute of the Amarantine saint whom it adorns, whose excellence lies in explaining Bhakti Siddhanta, the conclusion of devotional service rather than Jyotish. Perhaps those who conferred upon this great sadhu the title Siddhanta Saraswati attained a fortune comparable to that of the demigod Agni, who apparently presented to Krishna his eternal Sudarshana weapon. At some point during youth, Bimala Prasad adopted the name Sri Varshab Hanavi Dayata Das, the servant of the lover of Srimati Radharani, the daughter of Maharaj Vrishabhanu. At least from the late 1890s, he used this name in correspondence, yet was still known to most by his other two names. Shortly after Sri Bimala Prasad's spiritual initiation by Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji in 1901, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur added the word bhakti to the apparently academic title Siddhanta Saraswati, who thus was sometimes referred to as Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's conferring the name Bhakti Siddhanta was in accord with the then in vogue practice among Vaishnavas, Gauriyas in particular, to bestow titles beginning with Bhakti. Bhakti Siddhanta became the norm for addressing Sri Siddhanta Saraswati when, upon taking sannyas at 44, he became Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami. The title Bhakti Siddhanta indicates that the summum bonum of all scriptural deliberations is pure devotional service to Sri Krishna. Siddhanta refers to the final conclusion of a Vedic doctrine established on the basis of Shastra and in refutation of the theories of other Vedic schools, and Shuddha Saraswati is the presiding goddess of Paravidya, the spiritual knowledge of Shastra, whose blessing is manifest not merely in book learning, but in realization, grasp of subtleties, resolution of seeming contradictions and other perplexing points, power of composition, ability to impart learning to others, and all other facets of a genuinely accomplished scholar. Therefore, the prefix bhakti revealed the true purport of the name Siddhanta Saraswati, for bhakti is indeed the ultimate doctrine of Vedic lore, L-O-R-E, as revealed through the brilliance of Shuddha Saraswati, present as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who was unparalleled in knowing and making known Bhakti Siddhanta, the conclusion of bhakti. As Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati pointed out, any activity devoid of Bhakti Siddhanta is antipathetic to Shuddha Bhakti. It was with and by the Bhakti Siddhanta, intrinsic to his being, that he cut to pieces all upper Siddhantas, false conclusions, and established Shuddha Bhakti Siddhanta. Bhakti Siddhanta is also an important term in the Madhva Sampradaya. Yet from the Gaudiya perspective, its deepest purport is synonymous with that of Rupanuga. For Sri Rupa is the Rasa Acharya, and to please Lord Chaitanya, Rasa must be in accord with the Siddhanta presented by Sri Rupa in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Rasa bhash hoy jodi Siddhanta birod, shahite na pare Prabhu, mane hoy krod. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not tolerate and would become angry about presentations in which transcendental mellows overlapped in a manner contrary to the principles of Bhakti Siddhanta. His non-difference from Saraswati was evident in his non-stop Hari Katha, for the goddess Saraswati is also known as Vani or Vak, both meaning speech or message, and in her Shuddha manifestation is Hari Katha, perpetually manifesting on Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's tongue. Shuddha Saraswati empowered his words with the potency and sweetness of the spiritual energy. In an address during a Vyasa Puja festival, Srila Saraswati Thakur himself indicated his identity with Shuddha Saraswati. It's quoting from Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. On Gaur Shukla Panchami, the fifth day of the bright fortnight of Magh, the day of Saraswati Puja, children perform worship for the sake of gaining materialistic knowledge, aparavidya, and we, members of the Gauriya Math, offer such worship through the hand of Vyas to the goddess of spiritual knowledge, paravidya, on the fifth day of the dark fortnight of Magh, Krishna Shukla Panchami. In other words, today is Saraswati Puja. Worshipping Shuddha Saraswati, she who bestows that knowledge by which the first symptom of gaining which is that one understands that the so-called knowledge for which everyone in the world worships Saraswati is not at all knowledge, and is actually an obstacle to gaining knowledge. So the what people call Saraswati Puja is asking for the benediction of becoming increasingly ignorant. And they think that they're being favored by Saraswati. So actual Saraswati Puja is done through the hand of Vyas. Vyasa is offering puja to Saraswati on this day, particularly on this day. Yeah, I can just read from the book. In the next edition of this book, I want to make a few changes. Oh. This is Nata Gauranga's edition. He's underlining, I think, what seems to him difficult words. There are many underlined. But to me, most of the words which are underlined seem to be just very common words, like minuscule, inimitable, nondescript, beseech, proverbial. Very ordinary words. So, in the next edition, I want to make at least a few changes in the next printing. And one is to, after reading the book, go back and read the Mangalacharan. Again, the pranam mantras to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. That after reading the book, the significance of the pranam mantras should be more manifest. So I'll just read that again with a short explanation. Although actually the pranam mantras could be explained much longer. The whole book is an expansion from the pranam mantras. So let's read them. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Praishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Namine Shri Varshabhanavi Devi Dayataya Kripabdhaye Krishna Sambandha Vijnana Dayane Prabhave Namaha Madhur Yojvala Premardha Shri Rupanoga Bhaktida Shri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namastute Namaste Gauravani Shri Murtaye Dina Tarine Rupanoga Virudhapa Siddhanta Dvanta Harine. Alright, so I'll read it. I adore him who is known in this world as His Divine Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada, who is of the same status as Lord Vishnu and is most dear to Lord Krishna. So some of these words could be translated in different ways also. I offer homage to him whose eternal identity is Sri Varshabhanavi Devi Dayata. One who is very dear. That's not right. It's supposed to be the servant of. It's supposed to be the servant of Dayata Das. One very dear to Srimati Radharani. Oh. That's a serious mistake. I better make a note of that. Who is powerful, an ocean of transcendental mercy, and a deliverer of the science of Krishna. Although actually, literally, it says Varshabhanavi Devi Dayata. O giver of Srila Rupa Goswami's treasure of bhakti, which is replete with divine love of Radha and Krishna, I bow to you the very form of Lord Chaitanya's mercy potency. I offer homage to you, the manifestation of Lord Chaitanya's words, the savior of fallen souls, and the remover of the darkness of incorrect conclusions that oppose the teachings of Srila Rupa Goswami. Some commentary on this. As one who is cherished by Srimati Radharani, Sri Varshabhanavi Devi Dayata, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, although appearing in this world, Bhutale, is of the same status as the Supreme Lord Vishnu, Vishnupada, and is most dear to Lord Krishna, Krishna Prishta. Notwithstanding, or characteristic of, his exalted status, he extends himself to and uplifts fallen souls, Dinatari. Thus he is an ocean of mercy, Kripabdhi, and indeed the very form of Lord Gauranga's mercy potency, Sri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigraha. His distribution of Lord Chaitanya's mercy is particularly via the medium of his, Lord Chaitanya's message, of which he, lowercase, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, is the divine manifestation, Gauravani Sri Murti. Lord Gauranga came to give the most sublime and radiant mellow of devotional service in divine love, Unatojvala Rasa, which Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati distributes in the line following Srila Rupa Goswami, Madhur Yojvala Prema Agha, Sri Rupa Noga Bhaktida, who presented the kernel, the essence, of Lord Chaitanya's teachings by defining Shuddha Bhakti as favorable devotional service to Krishna, devoid of any trace of personal desire, Anyabhilashita Shunya. To differentiate and protect Shuddha Bhakti from various prevalent vitiated forms that claimed the stewardship of Srila Rupa Goswami, yet grossly or subtly nourished desires other than to satisfy Krishna, Anyabhilasha, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, as the servant of the best of Srila Rupa Goswami's followers, namely Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, removes the darkness of incorrect conclusions that oppose the teachings of Srila Rupa Goswami, Rupa Noga Virudhapa Siddhanta Dvanta Hari, and is the powerful deliverer, Dai Prabhu, of genuine knowledge of Shuddha Bhakti, beginning with the science of one's relationship with Krishna, Krishna Sambandha Vigyan, which leads to practical devotional service, Abhideya, and the ultimate goal, Prayojan, sweet, resplendent love of Krishna, Madhur Yojvala Prema. Now I'm going to continue this discussion of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's glories. By replying to a query sent to me by email by your old friend from Govardhan, Vishnu Kant Prabhu, who is now in Bangalore. His query is as follows. I saw an article on the link provided below, http://gosai.com/writings/society-consciousness-versus-krishna-consciousness, which is a kind of refutation of the conception supposedly stated by an ISKCON leader as, we cannot even extend this family, ISKCON, to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. We cannot even take one step forward because the problem is if we put too much emphasis on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, then we will miss out on our focus. We will lose the focus on ISKCON. End of supposed quote. Then Vishnu Kant Prabhu continues. I don't know how far that statement, Purava Paksha, represents ISKCON, because I am sure many other leaders and devotees consider Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur as original founders of our movement. Maharaj, can you please clarify and let me know your views for my better understanding? All right. I'll attempt to do that. While discussing our acharyas and their contributions and their mission, we should understand that they are not like us. That word I was using, martya, is translated as mortal. But the word martya, it gives the English word mortal, it's a literal translation, subject to death. But it also means that we are subject to all the limitations of a mortal person. Many persons have appeared in this world, of whom biographies have been written. Some people, they get more than one biography written about them. For instance, Mahatma Gandhi has had more than one biography written about him. The person called Mahatma Gandhi was Martya, mortal. The Mahatma Gandhi-ness of him, or you can, to be more accurate, the Mohandas Gandhi-ness of him, began at his birth and ended at his death. That identification as that person began at his birth and ended with his death. There was no such person before that, and after his death there was no other such person. Of course, the Atma who came to be known for a brief blip in time as Mahatma Gandhi is eternal. But that particular personality that was manifested was only manifested for a short time. And wherever Mahatma Gandhi is now, wherever in the spiritual or material worlds he may be, he's no longer involved in what he was involved in at that time, and probably has no recollection of what he was involved in. And for instance, if he has taken birth, we're just hypothesizing here to give an example, if he's taken birth in the heavenly planets, then he will be in a demigod human-like form, male form, then he is no doubt interested in the heavenly delights and not interested in Indian politics. So that personality of Mahatma Gandhi was manifested for a short time and is no longer, and never will be ever again. But the great acharyas, although they appear in this world as if they are, from our perspective, they appear as if they're historical persons. But it's not that they became devotees and did something and went, and then they're gone, finished. But they're eternally devotees. They're devotees before they come to this world, and they continue after they leave this world, and they leave their contribution in this world. So they're of a category completely different to that of worldly persons, mortal persons. So we should not try to, it is a great mistake to try to judge persons who are from beyond this world by the standards of this world. It is a mistake because we will misunderstand, and it's also a great offense to think that they are limited by our limitations and that they are obliged to follow the limitations which we invent, various laws or moral principles that we invent. And it's also an offense to even think that they can be understood or measured by the feeble mental constructs that we call, for instance, psychology, history, sociology, and so on. I've discussed this in the beginning of this Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava book. But on the other hand, to some extent, we have to examine, even as aspiring Vaishnavas, we have to examine the Acharya's contributions in terms of, even though they are beyond time and space, to some extent, we observe their activities within a particular time and space, because they appear in this world in a particular time and space. And as Acharyas, they appear to address the particular situation in a particular time and space. The circumstances, although they, all the Acharyas appear to present the same, or with the same mission, the mission of Krishna, to uplift the fallen souls, they appear in different times and places, and they present the message of Krishna in terms, or in a manner which the people of that era and ethos can best understand, without changing the message to become part of that era and ethos. It's presented in a language and to some extent according to the cultural norms of that era and ethos. And it's also presented to the extent that those the people of a particular era and ethos can understand it. So when seeing the activities of the Acharyas, this should be understood. And in this way it can be understood how, although Acharyas, they may appear to differ from each other in their teachings and their presentation, by understanding that their mission is one and their message is one, but according to various circumstances that they appear in and address, they may appear to be different or even opposed to each other. So this is the first point to understand when we're discussing the contributions of our Acharyas and how we should view them. Today we're celebrating the Vyasa Puja of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. We understand him through Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We understand Bhaktivinoda Thakur through Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And then again through Srila Prabhupada, our own A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. If we say that in ISKCON, what's the content? I don't know what was actually said. I didn't go to the website to see what was actually written there. And just as a tangential point, I don't recommend wandering around the internet as a process conducive for advancement in devotional service. Just, you see something on the internet and so many people say so many things, and then you become confused, and then you either become confused and get in Maya, or you ask someone, well, what does this mean? But there's no need, actually. Otherwise you can find so many doubts. You can become thoroughly confused by the grace of the internet. But there's no need to. If we're going to study Maya for the sake of refuting, then we should choose our Maya carefully. It's not that every and any form of Maya who comes in unlimited forms that we should, that we have to try to understand every facet of Maya. And that's not possible for us to do so. So if we have been deputed to do so, if we have, we may study Mayavad, for instance, for the sake of refuting it. Or we might study modern science for the sake of refuting it in terms of Bhakti Siddhanta. But simply to wander around on the internet, even in bhakti, there's so many people with so many opinions. So my advice is, even if you're going to go on the internet, make sure where you're going. Don't just wander around here and there. Now, I didn't go to this website to check out what had reportedly been said. I don't know if this is actually a correct statement or who made it, the statement that we cannot extend this family ISKCON to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. I don't know who reportedly has said this or even if they actually said it. It sounds like a strange statement in some ways, but in other ways we can understand the if we rephrase it a little bit, we can make it easier to understand. In other words, what I mean to say is that Srila Prabhupada established ISKCON, which is different to the Gauriya Math. It's not the Gauriya Math. It has many things in common, but it is different. So we understand the teachings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur through the teachings of Srila Prabhupada. It's not that we're rejecting Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur by doing so. In fact, the mission of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was fulfilled in a tremendous way by Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Now, if we were to try to directly approach Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, we probably wouldn't understand a single word of what was being said. And even in the Gauriya Math, in the various branches of the Gauriya Math in Bengal, you'll hardly find anyone who ever reads his works. Because even if you're Bengali and you can read Bengali, it's very difficult to understand. His language is very difficult. So it's just a fact that in every generation, every acharya, even the great acharyas, even one generation later, they are understood by discipular descendants according to how their own acharya teaches them. These Ritvikvadis, they say, well, we want to understand Prabhupada directly. But they're not. They're understanding it through the interpretation of Krishna Kandesai. They say, well, just read Prabhupada's books, and then your Prabhupada will directly teach you. If you read Prabhupada's books all day and night for the rest of your life, you'll never get the slightest idea of any Ritvik philosophy. That comes from Krishna Kandesai. It's his interpretation. So, within ISKCON nowadays also, I mean, I can clearly say that the understanding of my disciples or their general attitude and approach towards Srila Prabhupada's teachings is quite different from that of disciples of certain other of my godbrothers. We're not saying that my way is, I am the way, the truth and the light, and no one comes to Srila Prabhupada but through me. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying there are significant differences out in outlook. And if we say that we should just follow Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati directly, how is that going to be? I mean, even this website which has been referred to is that of Bhakti Gaurav Narasimha Maharaj and his followers. Who Bhakti Gaurav Narasimha Maharaj was a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. But he took much guidance and inspiration from, well, especially from two of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj and Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj, who are both, obviously, being Prabhupada's godbrothers, they're disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But these two of Srila Prabhupada, these two exalted godbrothers of Srila Prabhupada, their outlook on certain things were quite different. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he would emphasize often that you have to chant a lakh of names every day, 64 rounds, and he particularly emphasized that for the pujaris, of whom at that time Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj was a pujari. So Puri Maharaj, very much emphasized that you have to chant 64 rounds, otherwise you're going nowhere. Whereas Sridhar Maharaj made the almost revolutionary statement that such an understanding is parochial. Parochial means small-minded or not having a broader vision. And he said the real essence is service, not chanting, the real essence is service. Now, without going into the subtleties of these two apparently opposite outlooks, on the face of it, these two understandings are opposed. But they both were derived from the teachings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So if you say we should follow Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the followers of Sridhar Maharaj will say, well, we understand it like this. And the followers of Puri Maharaj will say, no, it's like this. Then who is to say who is following Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur? We are following through Srila Prabhupada. And you can't avoid that. It's not that we have rejected Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Not by any means. This whole movement is a manifestation of his mercy. But we have to understand through others. What's this contention here? If we put too much emphasis on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, that's not very well phrased. Everything we're doing is emphasis on Bhaktisiddhanta, but at the same time, we understand him through our own Srila Prabhupada, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and everyone does that. In fact, how Bhakti Gaurav Narasimha Maharaj disciples understand Bhaktisiddhanta is through, must be through his understanding. How does he harmonize these two outlooks of Puri Maharaj and Sridhar Maharaj, both of who heard Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, their whole life and teachings, everything is based on Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. How does he harmonize that? Well, his disciples must know. But whatever it is, it's probably not exactly what Sridhar Maharaj says and what Puri Maharaj says. Although in their understanding, it will be the same because that's required. The harmonization of when different acharyas apparently say different things, different times, different places, different circumstances, own realizations, the ability of the persons who are being taught to understand, we'll find at a higher level there is no difference. And that actually comes in the teachings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Or that was described by one of his sannyas disciples, Jajabha Maharaj, in which Jajabha Maharaj said to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that you tell everyone to chant 64 rounds, but here in Chaitanya Math, I don't see anyone except you doing it. And they probably didn't see him do it either, because he rose very early in the morning. So I don't see anyone doing it. And you're saying that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's served at the Chaitanya Math, cannot be served properly unless you chant around. Lack of names, but I don't see anyone who's doing it. And they don't have time to do it because you give everyone so much service that they don't have time to do it. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he replied that you don't see, but I see how they're all chanting a lack of names. I see people, and they're busy all day, and they're definitely not chanting a lack of names. I mean, this is pratyaksha praman. They're not chanting a lack of names. Later, Jajabha Maharaj wrote, after Saraswati Thakur's passing, I realized that service is non-different from chanting. And therefore, they're chanting a lack of names. Which now, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was serious when he said you should chant a lack of names. So that means you should take your beads and chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Actually, physically, although it's not a physical activity, it's a spiritual activity, but one should vocalize this Harinam Maha Mantra 108 times 64 times. That's what he meant. That's why Puri Maharaj, he emphasized, you have to do this. But he also said that if you do service, he didn't say that, but that was how Jajabha Maharaj and it's apparently Sridhar Maharaj understood that. That the service, the attitude of service is the essence. So if one is fully engaged in service under the direction of the Acharya, that is equivalent to chanting. But nevertheless, the understandings are different, and although all the Gauriya Maths and all and ISKCON will when I say all the Gauriya Maths, that means that their Gauriya Maths established, they all tend, or they mostly bear generic names, something something Gauriya Math, Rupa Anuga Gauriya Math, Sri Chaitanya Gauriya Math, and so on. But they're actually, we say the Gauriya Maths. But it's actually many different organizations which have come, been established by, the original Sri Chaitanya Math is established by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And then Sri Gauriya Math in Calcutta was also established by him. And there are so many organizations which have come out from his followers who generically we call Gauriya Math. And they all follow and claim allegiance to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as we do. But they all have at least a somewhat different flavor. And they don't all have, for instance, the same, just like we don't have the same morning program exactly as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati gave. So they also don't have exactly the same morning program. But they don't think that they're following Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur any less by doing so. In fact, they understand that this is how we should follow him as given by our present Acharya. So it's not that we're emphasizing him less, by not doing things exactly in the same way as the Gaudiya Math, but we're accepting his mercy as we receive it through Srila Prabhupada, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We're receiving it as he presented it to us, as Krishna inspired him, his own Gurudev inspired him to present it for our uplift. This is our understanding. I'm sure and I hope that can't be the intention. If anyone has the intention to minimize Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then that's obviously a very wrong outlook. But rather, we in ISKCON serve the mission of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in a somewhat different way, as in the Gaudiya Maths, and they are different among themselves also. And although nowadays there may be various opinions about this, but certainly when Srila Prabhupada was present, he was quite sure and that ISKCON, and we could practically see that ISKCON was doing more to, that means the work of Srila Prabhupada was doing more to fulfill the mission of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati than all the other God brothers put together. Some people may be angry if you say that, but practically speaking, that's a fact. Maybe I'll get an article written about me on the same website having said that. So it's not that we're not de-emphasizing Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, but we are obliged to, and we cannot do but otherwise, we are obliged to approach his teachings through Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, as everyone else does. Everyone approaches the predecessor acharyas through the present acharyas. It's not possible to do so otherwise. As Prabhupada said, you cannot jump over to my Guru Maharaj. You have to go through me. It's just a fact of the way things work in this world. We are not separated from the previous acharyas. Spiritually, we are not separated. But we are separated by time. So those who are spiritually astute can approach the previous acharyas through their writings, which are non-different from them. But even to come to that level, one has to be trained by a present-day follower. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, even though he is beyond time and space, his contribution is to be understood through the present acharyas, which for us here in ISKCON means particularly through His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we also understand the acharyas as part of a chain coming from Krishna. We also understand them in terms of the previous acharyas. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is Rupa Anoga Viruddha Apasiddhanta Dvanta Hari. His teachings destroy or remove the darkness of the wrong conclusions that are opposed to the teachings of Rupa Goswami. So we understand the acharyas as representatives of the previous acharyas, and especially Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as he himself repeatedly indicated. His mission is nothing but that of Bhaktivinoda. Just like we in ISKCON, even though Srila Prabhupada is no longer present to our physical sight, but we refer to him, we quote him, we emphasize him much. So in the Gaudiya Math, in their publications, they emphasize Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings, his contributions. They held annual major festivals, public anustan, public functions, in which the major persons of the intellectual elite of Bengal were invited to speak on the glories of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So this book, Bhakti Siddhanta Vaibhava, I'm feeling the great lack that it's only 50% done. That really, actually many books need to be. We can't understand the Acharyas fully by any means. And just like Krishna can be understood from various perspectives, so the Acharyas. To show what are the contributions of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he conveyed them. And then to show how Srila Prabhupada fulfilled the mission of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and all the previous acharyas. This should be demonstrated for the sake of those who are prepared to accept that. There may be people who are not prepared to accept it. In the modern world, since Srila Prabhupada brought Krishna consciousness to the West, there have been two books written about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. One is called The Seventh Goswami by Rupa Vilas Prabhu, which is a good book. No doubt. And the other is called Hindu Encounter with Modernity by a person who is initiated by Srila Prabhupada, Shuka Bhaktas, which is not at all a good book. But really the contribution of Bhaktivinoda, it really needs to be brought to the attention of at least first of all the devotee world. This recently at that function in Dwarka, one statement struck me more than others. That was by yourself. What exactly did you say? Something about you were there when I was in Bhaktivinoda's disappearance day in Vallabhvidyanagar, and you were surprised. What was it? I can't remember. Maybe you can remember. Do you remember? Something that you were surprised how much there's feeling or for Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And I thought, well, I mean, this is every member of ISKCON, they should be acquainted with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We're all living on his mercy. We're all here by his mercy. And what the acharyas after him have given is only what he has given. This is all bhakti, everything, all. Or if it's actually what Srila Prabhupada meant it to be, then every speck of dust in this building is only Bhaktivinoda. It's all his contribution. But our devotees, that struck me. They don't know. We should know. Parampara jano bhalo mate. We just sung. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in composing this song, listing the names of the prominent acharyas in our sampradaya, listing and giving just a little insight into their personality, he states, parampara jano bhalamati. We should know well what is parampara. So, who are our acharyas? Well, there's the exoteric and esoteric understanding. Exoteric means he liked to eat this kind of food. That's also esoteric if understood from the proper perspective, because there's nothing actually exoteric about them. But what is the inner life? Oh, in that regard, what is the mission of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur? This is very nicely summarized in a verse composed by Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Goswami, who I was just mentioning. So I'll give the Sanskrit verse, and with his own common translation come commentary on that. Nikila bhuvana maya chinna vichinna katri vibuddha bahula mrigya mukti mohanta datri shithilita vidhi raga radhya radhesha dhani vilasatu hridi nityam bhakti siddhanta vani. So even if you don't understand the words, it sounds very beautiful, even if I don't pronounce it very beautifully. So this is describing Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. With his first step, he cut to pieces the entire plane of exploitation. And with his second, he crushed the speculation of scholars of salvation and liberation. With his third, he softened Vaidhi Bhakti with a touch of divine love, Raga Marga. Taking us beyond Vaikuntha, he has introduced us to the highest worship of Sri Sri Radha Govinda. With the softness of Vrindavan within and the hardness of a devastator without, that's important, isn't it? Because we think of him as the lion guru and very severe and stern, but that is only because of the softness of Vrindavan within. That isn't a covering of the softness of Vrindavan within. His sternness and harshness, there's not a covering or something that he temporarily manifests, or it is a his apparent harshness is only a manifestation of his softness within. Because it's only because he loves Krishna so much that he is so much committed to removing the offenses of the people who are committed not to love Krishna. He cannot tolerate anything which goes against the sense of loving Krishna. That is because he loves Krishna. His apparent harshness is not out of character with a person who loves Krishna. Rather, it is the very character. If they're in this world, they must act like this. So with the softness of Vrindavan within and the hardness of a devastator without, he created havoc in the world, fighting with one and all, single-handedly battling against the whole world and cutting everything to pieces was his external feature. His second attitude was to stop the boasting research of scholars and doctors of different schools of thought. And third, to minimize and slacker the grandeur of the worship of Narayana and establish service to Radha Govinda as the topmost attainment. He caused the domain of love to descend into this plane with service to Radha Govinda, establishing the flow of divine love from the heart. Establishing that the flow of divine love from the heart is all in all. That was his history. The real existence of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. May his divine teachings, Bhakti Siddhanta Varni, dance eternally within the core of our hearts. So, this is required also for all the previous acharyas. What are their contributions? They continue to live. He reasons ill. What is that? What's that? He reasons ill. Who? Who says that Vaishnavas die when thou art living still in sound? A Vaishnav dies to live and living tries to spread the holy name around. So the acharyas, they live in their contribution, in their teachings, which are non-different from them. So through our present acharya, we have access to the previous acharyas. So, what are the contributions of Bhaktivinoda Thakur? What are the contributions of Srila Prabhupada? That also, more than one devotee has told me that, having written this Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava, I should do such a work on Srila Prabhupada and his teachings also. Because how they're being variously interpreted, misinterpreted, it's rampant. So that also requires to be done. So I'm praying for the mercy that I there are various devotees serving Srila Prabhupada's mission in various ways. I'm praying for the mercy that I may be able to serve the mission in this way by compiling some important books on the delineating the mission of our acharyas. That can only be done by their mercy. Otherwise, what they've given is beyond human intelligence to understand. It's certainly only by their mercy, but that's what they want to give to the world. And if that clear flow is not coming through, then offering flowers in a Vyasa Puja ceremony won't help us very much. The formality may go on, but the spirit, the proper spirit, what they actually came to give was not another festival on the Vaishnava calendar, another day for sweet rice. Jai. Great, it's a feast day tomorrow. That's not what they came for. That also, there should be a feast. But that's not the whole purpose of their coming. So, we'll sing. Any questions about this? Yeah. We understand the past acharyas through the teachings of the present acharyas, and we understand the present acharyas through the teachings of the past acharyas. Both ways it works.
And that can also be misused.
Can be misused. Everything can be misused. Yeah. Everything is misusable. Everything is likely to be misused. One feature of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is that he wrote, particularly his writing and his speaking also, in such a manner that it's very difficult to misinterpret. But it's also very difficult to understand in the first place. But it's precise. If the words are taken as they are, then everything is very clear. Always there's interpretation. There's always some cause or case for interpretation. That's always there. Even what Krishna, Prabhupada presents Bhagavad Gita as it is, but where Krishna says, don't disturb the minds of the ignorant, Prabhupada says, do disturb them. And we take what Prabhupada says, not what Krishna says. Prabhupada says that the devotee understands the purpose of the Lord. Therefore, he understands that when Krishna says this, that's not an absolute instruction. Rather, the instruction is that we should disturb their minds. So, then again we're coming to the topic of which we've been discussing for the last few days. We just touched that topic of how to understand Shastra. The role of the guru was not discussed much, but that's absolutely essential. There's no approach to it. It's guru sadhu Shastra. Shastra is the center, no doubt, but it's not possible to approach without guru. So what is the role of the guru? That's also big topics. So what was your question? The question is that sometimes today in ISKCON we hear devotees presenting what to you seem like weird concepts, and they say that the present acharyas teach in this way. So? Then it becomes like Jato Mot Toto Pot. Yeah, then, next comment. It's already known, so what's the question? How do we navigate through this ocean of sharks and crocodiles and various species, Timingala? Is that the question? Well, Atato Brahma Jignasa. Those who are sincere to find the truth, Krishna will arrange that they get it himself. If we want anything other than full surrender to Krishna, if we're looking to be cheated, then we may be cheated also. Everyone gets what they want. And by the mercy of devotees, we can get something better even than what we want. The verse in Bhagavad Gita, Moghasha, Mogha Karmano, Mogha Jnana Vichetasa, Rakshasim, Asuring Chaiva. Prakritiṃ mohinīṃ śrutāha. What's Prabhupada's translation of that? Does anyone have a Bhagavad Gita? Those who are thus deluded. Look that up. Moghāśa. Those who are thus bewildered by demoniac and atheistic views. Yeah, all right, we're looking. I can also paraphrase it, but we're just looking it up. Moghasha, just look that up. That will get it. You found it? No. Which book? Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demoniac and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruitive activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. So those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demoniac and atheistic views. So people, according to people's disposition, they're attracted to various outlooks. So those who are attracted to wrong ideas, they'll find someone to teach that to them. We're all attracted to wrong ideas. So we can simply pray that Krishna manifest himself to us in the form of good association, that we can be saved from that. Yeah. There are Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's Upadeshamrita. There's one book which was published fairly recently in Bengali called Srila Prabhupada's Upadeshamrita. It's not his commentary on Rupa Goswami's Upadeshamrita, it's different. It's a collection of various of his sayings taken from various writings. And the question is that can't we have that for Prabhupada's teachings? Well, already such things are going on. You can look, what's that called? Vanipedia is there on the internet. That Upadeshamrita is not very systematic. But yeah, that's required. Srila Prabhupada's teachings on this, Srila Prabhupada's teachings on that. The apparent contradictions in his teachings should be analyzed and understood. Just like some disciples of Srila Prabhupada insist, quoting Srila Prabhupada, that lady devotees be called Prabhu. When I said that in Russia, there are about 100 devotees present. They all burst out laughing. And if you don't call them Prabhu, they think you're an offender to Prabhupada, an offender to the women, an offender to Prabhupada, and you're off and you're not following Prabhupada. Others, like myself, think that this is nonsense. So, both can quote Prabhupada to apparently substantiate their position. There you go, we need gurus in every generation. You can choose your guru. Maybe some of you didn't choose your guru. I'm the only one who comes here. So, bad luck for you. You got me. So, if you don't like it, you can go to the branch of the Sampradaya where they call women Prabhu. And that's just one example. You may think it's a small thing, but small. People get very upset. I'm upset over it. And there are certain Matajis in our movement. If you call them Prabhu, they get very upset. But it's a matter of understanding the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, which, yeah, it may not be so simple. And, well, as Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is simple for the simple and difficult for the complex. So sometimes Srila Prabhupada made things very simple, and some simple-minded people think that's the way it should remain forever. The way Srila Prabhupada taught Krishna consciousness in the earliest days of ISKCON, it changed. At one point he started introducing more and more rules and regulations. A few years ago, I was in Ljubljana in Slovenia, in the Tulasi Arati, after Mangal Arati. I was circumambulating Tulasi, Then I noticed to my left there's a Mataji circumambulating just next to me. So I moved. I thought, that's strange, and I moved to my right. And there was one on the right too. And then I realized this was because of one paper written by Jyotirmayi Devi Dasi, which said, in the early days of ISKCON, we all circumambulated, men and women circumambulated Tulsi together. But later on, these nasty sannyasis, because they hated women, I'm paraphrasing her now, they introduced these rules that women and men should be separate in kirtan. Maybe the nasty sannyasis did hate women, but the reason for separating the women and the men was because that's actually real human culture is not even to separate them in the kirtan. The real culture is that women are behind a screen and they're not even seen. That was the culture until recently in this country. At public gatherings, women are not even seen. But Prabhupada didn't try to introduce all these things immediately. There are many things which he gradually introduced. See, I mean, consider who he was preaching to. It's a complete miracle how people of so far away from anything even slightly resembling Vedic culture took to Krishna consciousness at all. But to opine that the way Prabhupada had it in the earliest days should be the standard forever, just like in the early days Prabhupada following the what his disciples were doing, he sometimes called the Matajis Prabhu, but later on he said they should be called Matajis. And Harishoy Prabhu said in all the time he was with Prabhupada day and night for several years, he never heard Prabhupada ever call any Mataji Prabhu, and it was never done in his presence. So different people have different understandings. That's all. So these things should be delineated. Yeah. Many acharyas may say many things, but there are boundaries to interpretation. Yeah, otherwise there's no meaning to... Yeah, we have our Guru Sadhu Shastra, how they are understood. Yeah, it's a big topic. If one doesn't become... Chitete Guru Mukha Padmavakya Chitete Korea Aikya, then one has a different understanding. Arna kore homane asha. Yeah, it's not that there may be different in understandings, therefore they're all equally valid. And it may be that the followers also misunderstand, just like I was saying, Sridhar Maharaj. He emphasizes more on service than lots of chanting. And Puri Maharaj emphasized more on chanting. That everyone must chant 64 rounds. But those who are sagrahi can find the essence in the teachings of both of them, even though extrinsically both appear to be saying something different. Anyway, let's not get too much into a discussion of this now, because as it's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's Vyasa Puja, let's go on with that. Of The Harmonist, the English magazine of the erstwhile Gauri Amart. One devotee told me he had read the Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav part 1 and part 2, but it seemed like he wasn't going to read part 3, but part 3 is with many essays written by him, which a lot of his teachings. So it's not to be just, oh, I'm not interested in the teachings. This is probably the most important part. So many of the statements he made appear to be quite shocking. The essay is called the Gaurya Mutt, its message and activities, and I recommend reading it, this essay. To get an understanding of what ISKCON is meant to do. It's not meant to be an organization, anything like any organization of this material world. So, in this extract, let's just read it. You could have some, read a little. The truth, satya, is propagated in a twofold way, viz., namely, positively by the method of direct support and negatively by the method of opposition. The truth cannot be made sufficiently known by the positive method alone. Propaganda by the method of opposition, more than the presentation of the positive aspect, brings about more brilliantly in this world the appearance and glorification of the truth. The next paragraph is to demonstrate this point. In Satya Yoga, Hiranyakashipu, more than Prahlad, by the adoption of the method of negative propaganda, proclaimed greatly the glory of Nrsimhadev. How about that? It goes on. In Treta Yoga, Ravana, more than Hanuman, proclaimed the greatness of Sri Ramachandra to the world. In Dwarapa Yuga, more than the Pandavas, Yadavas, and other devotees, Kamsa, Jarasandha, Shishupal, and the rest, as antagonists, proclaim the greatness of Sri Krishna. In Kali Yuga, Jagai, Madhai, Chandkazi, Prakashananda Sarasvati, the professor of Mayavad, Ramachandra Khan, the hater of Vishnu and the Vaishnavas, Ramachandra Puri, and in later times, the various hypocrite sects, more than the bhaktas of Gaura, have proclaimed the greatness of Gaura and Nityananda to the world by adopting the hostile method. In all ages, the truth is propagated in this world by the positive and negative methods. The true message of the Gaurya Mutt has spread and is spreading in the world in this manner. So, everything understood? Let's go on to something else. Not so easy to understand, no? So, now... I'm reading from another article from The Harmonist, the concluding portion of an article called Putana. Sri Krishna manifests his eternal birth, the pure cognitive essence of the serving soul, who is located above all mundane limitations. King Kamsa is the typical aggressive empiricist, ever on the lookout for the appearance of the truth for the purpose of suppressing him before he has time to develop. This is no exaggeration of the real connotation of the consistent empiric position. Who can go and... Can you do that, Dhammadachaitanya? Tell them to stop working until 12 o'clock. They can go somewhere else and work. The materialist has a natural repugnance for the transcendent, as we heard yesterday. He is disposed to think that faith in the incomprehensible is the parent of dogmatism and hypocrisy in the guise of religion. He is also equally under the delusion that there is no real dividing line between the material and the spiritual. He is strengthened in his delusion by the interpretation of scriptures by persons who are like-minded with himself. This includes all the lexicographic interpreters. The lexicographical interpretation is upheld by Kamsa as the real scientific explanation of the scriptures, and is perfectly in keeping with his dread of and aversion for the transcendental. This is great. It's so precisely to the point. These lexicographical interpretators are employed by Kamsa in putting down the first suspected appearance of any genuine faith in the transcendental. So it's allegorical that Kamsa wanted to kill Krishna before Krishna got big enough to cause trouble for Kamsa. So the representatives of Kamsa, they want to destroy any bhakti before it appears in the world and gets strong. And what are their methods of doing so? Here it's been described that the lexicographical interpreters who want to, by their Sanskrit ability, they want to study the Shastra and kill the real message of the Shastra before anyone has any chance to even begin to understand that. They say, no, that's not the proper way of understanding. You understand like this. So in this way, they want to kill Krishna and Krishna bhakti before they have the chance to develop. King Kamsa knows very well that if the faith in the transcendental is once allowed to grow, it is sure to upset all his empiric prospects. There is historical ground for such misgivings. Accordingly, if the empiric domination is to be preserved intact, it would be necessary not to lose a moment to put down the transcendental heresy the instant it threatens to make its appearance in earnest. Very interesting. The transcendental heresy the instant it makes its appearance in earnest. In other words, yeah, religion we can allow, but when you get serious about it, that should not be allowed. King Kamsa, acting on this traditional fear, is never slow to take the scientific precaution of deputing empiric teachers of the scriptures, backed by the resources of dictionary and grammar and all empiric subtleties, to put down by the show of specious arguments based on hypothetical principles. Just what you were talking about yesterday. The true interpretation of the eternal religion revealed by the scriptures. Kamsa is strongly persuaded that faith in the transcendental can be effectively put down by empiricism if prompt and decisive measures are adopted at the very outset. This is undoubtedly the work of an intelligence that is not only far greater than ours, but comes from a different platform than ours. This is not the writing of someone whose intelligence was developed by, they give the children different games to develop their intelligence, right? Scrabble, different games like that. This is a different kind of intelligence altogether. He, namely Kamsa, attributes the failure of atheism in the past to the neglect of the adoption of such measures before the theistic fallacy has had time to spread among the fanatical masses. But Kamsa is found to count without his host. When Krishna is born, he is found to be able to upset all sinister designs against those who are apprised by himself of his advent. The apparently causeless faith displayed by persons, irrespective of age, sex, and condition, may confound all rabid empiricists. Nice adjective. Who are on principle averse to the absolute truth. On principle averse to the absolute truth. They say we're neutral, but by their very methodology shows that they are on principle averse to the absolute truth. They're on principle averse to even the admittance of the possibility of transcendence. And they call that neutrality. Whose appearance means the appearance of the absolute truth, namely Krishna, is utterly incompatible with the domination of empiricism. But no adverse efforts of the empiricists, whose rule seems till then to be perfectly well established over the minds of the deluded souls of this world, can dissuade any person from exclusively following the truth when he actually manifests his birth in the pure cognitive essence of the soul. Putana is the slayer of all infants. The baby, when he or she comes out of the mother's womb, falls at once into the hands of the pseudo-teachers of religion. These teachers are successful in forestalling the attempts of the good preceptor, whose help is never sought by the atheists of this world at the baptisms of their babies. This is ensured by the arrangements of all established churches of the world. They, the established churches of the world, have been successful only in supplying watchful putanas for effecting the spiritual destruction of persons from the moment of their birth with the cooperation of their worldly parents. No human contrivance can prevent these putanas from obtaining possession of the pulpits. This is due to the general prevalence of atheistic disposition in the people of this world. The church that has the best chance of survival in this damned world is that of atheism under the convenient guise of theism. The churches have always proved the staunchest upholders of the grossest forms of worldliness, from which even the worst of non-ecclesiastical criminals are found to recoil. This is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. There was no acharya previous to him who wrote like this. Unique. It is not from any deliberate opposition to the ordained clergy that these observations are made. The original purpose of the established churches of the world may not always be objectionable, not in every case. But no stable religious arrangement for instructing the masses has yet been successful. The Supreme Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in pursuance of the teachings of the scriptures, enjoins all absence of conventionalism for the teachers of the eternal religion. It does not follow that the mechanical adoption of the unconventional life by any person will make him a fit teacher of religion. Regulation is necessary for controlling the inherent worldliness of conditioned souls. But no mechanical regulation has any value even for such a purpose. The bona fide teacher of religion is neither any product of, nor the favorer of, any mechanical system. In his hands no system has likewise the chance of degenerating into a lifeless arrangement. The mere pursuit of fixed doctrines and fixed liturgies cannot hold a person to the true spirit of doctrine or liturgy. The idea of an organized church in an intelligible form indeed marks the close of the living spiritual movement. It's from the founder of the Gaudiya Mutt. Well, that was the whole point, that the Gaudiya Mutt is supposed to be different. And he was, through this magazine also, through this writing also, warning his members, the members. The great ecclesiastical establishments are the dikes and the dams to retain the current that cannot be held by any such contrivances. They indeed indicate a desire on the part of the masses to exploit a spiritual movement for their own purpose. They also unmistakably indicate the end of the absolute and unconventional guidance of the bona fide spiritual teacher. The people of this world understand preventive systems. They have no idea at all of the unprevented, positive, eternal life. Neither can there be any earthly contrivance for the permanent preservation of the life eternal on this mundane plane on the popular scale. Those are therefore greatly mistaken who are disposed to look forward to the amelioration of the worldly state in any worldly sense from the worldly success of any really spiritual movement. It is these worldly expectants who become the patrons of the mischievous race of the pseudo-teachers of religion, the Putanas, whose congenial function is to stifle the theistic disposition at the very moment of its suspected appearance. But the real theistic disposition can never be stifled by the efforts of these Putanas. The Putanas have power only over the atheist. It is a thankless but salutary task which they perform for the benefit of their unwilling victims. But as soon as theistic disposition proper makes its appearance in the pure cognitive essence of the awakened soul, the Putanas are decisively silenced at the very earliest stage of their encounter with newborn Krishna. The would-be slayer is herself slain. This is the reward of the negative services that the Putanas unwittingly render to the cause of theism by strangling all hypocritical demonstrations against their own hypocrisy. But Putana does not at all like to receive her reward in a form which involves the total destruction of her wrong personality. King Kamsa also does not like to lose the services of the most trusted of his agents. The effective silencing of the whole race of pseudo-teachers of religion is the first clear indication of the appearance of the Absolute on the mundane plane. The bona fide teacher of the Absolute heralds the advent of Krishna by his uncompromising campaign against the pseudo-teachers of religion. This requires explaining, line by line, which I won't attempt to do now. I would have to prepare myself and pray for the mercy to be able to do so. There's so much, it's such unconventional ideas and so much packed in there. But the point he makes at the end is that the actual acharyas who come to this world, we cannot, in this world there's no stopping the problems of hypocritical teachers, misinterpretation. The churches and religious organizations are certain to degrade, to if they at all started with a proper intention, that is certain to be degraded by the persons who lead the organization. Certain. This tendency can only be counteracted by the appearance of the pure devotees who have an uncompromising campaign against the pseudo-teachers of religion who are compared to Putana, who attempts to, at the appearance of Krishna, Putana attempts to kill him, but she is killed by him. So the allegorically, this is stating that the religions of the world, the teachers of religion, they kill people's natural tendency toward bhakti. Especially the organized religions, people are I'm born in a Muslim family, I'm born in a Hindu family. That means you're born into a system which will kill your actual tendency. If there's any tendency toward Krishna, that will be killed from the beginning by being raised as a good Christian or Hindu or whatever. But the bona fide teacher of the Absolute heralds the advent of Krishna by his uncompromising campaign against the pseudo teachers of religion. Just as Krishna killed Putana, so the real acharyas, who are the only hope for driving out ignorance in the world, by their uncompromising campaign against the Putanas or the misteachers of religion. They give hope to the world. It's all highly readable. This is from the writings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. A chanter of Hari Kirtan is necessarily the uncompromising enemy of worldliness and hypocrisy. It is his constant function to dispel all misconceptions by preaching the truth in its most unambiguous form, without any consideration of person, place, or time. The form to be adopted is that which is least likely to be misunderstood. It is his bounden duty to clearly and frankly oppose any person who tries to deceive and harm himself and others by misrepresenting the truth, whether due to malice or genuine misunderstanding. This will be possible if the chanter of kirtan is always prepared to submit to being trodden upon by thoughtless people, if such discomfort will enable him to benefit his persecutors by chanting of the truth in the most unambiguous manner. If he is unwilling or afraid of considerations of self-respect or personal discomfort to chant kirtan under all circumstances, he is unfit to be a preacher of the Absolute Truth. Humility implies perfect submission to the truth and no sympathy for untruth. Those who entertain any partiality for untruth are unfit to chant Hari Kirtan. Any clinging to untruth is opposed to the principle of humility born of absolute submission to the truth. Just those last three sentences, I could just prop. I've written this book now. It's like it's become a small book. Strongly speaking in Srila Prabhupada's service. You could just replace it, the whole book, with these three lines. But to make the point more fully, I'll leave the whole book. Those who perpetually serve the truth with all their faculties and who have no hankering for the trivialities of this world are necessarily always free from malice born of competing worldliness. Thus they are fit to admonish those who are actively engaged in harming themselves and others by opposing or misrepresenting the truth, for attaining rewards in the shape of a perpetuation of the state of misery and ignorance. The method employed by the servant of the good preceptor for preventing such misrepresentation of the truth is a part and parcel of the truth itself. The method employed by the servant of the good preceptor for preventing such misrepresentation of the truth is a part and parcel of the truth itself. It may not always be pleasing to the diseased susceptibilities of deluded minds, and may even be denounced by them as a malicious act with which they are only too familiar. But truthful words from the lips of a loyal and humble servant of Hari possess such beneficent power that all effort to suppress or obstruct those words serves merely, all effort to suppress or obstruct those words serves merely to vindicate to impartial minds the necessity of complete submission to the absolute truth as the only cure of the disease of worldliness. Humility employed in unambiguous service to the absolute truth is necessarily and qualitatively different from its perverted prototype practiced by cunning people for worldly gain. The professors of pseudo-humility have reason to fear the preaching of Hari's servant, one of whose duties is to expose the enormous possibility of mischief inherent in various forms of so-called spiritual conduct when they are prostituted for serving the untruth. Or, as His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada later wrote, no compromise. Ramakrishna, avatars, yogis, everyone was enemy to Guru Maharaj. He never compromised. Some godbrothers complained that this preaching was a chopping technique and it would not be successful. But we have seen that those who criticized fell down. In other words, those who criticized him for criticizing, they fell down. Their criticism in itself was a fall down. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati avowed that even if the whole world were against him, or if not even a single individual were to stay with him, or if those who had made a pretense of surrendering to him were to leave, still, under the protection of his Gurudev's lotus feet, he would fearlessly and unceasingly preach the unadulterated truth until the last moment he remained in this world. And if someday that truth were to enter the ear of even one fortunate soul, then through that lone person, the entire universe would attain the topmost benefit. Even if the whole world were against him, not a single individual were to stay with him. Or if those who made a pretense of surrendering were to leave, still, under the protection of his Gurudev's lotus feet, he would fearlessly and unceasingly preach the unadulterated truth until the last moment he remained in this world. And if someday that truth were to enter the ear of even one fortunate soul, then through that lone person, the entire universe would attain the topmost benefit. Yeah, there's a lot more to being a guru than patting babies on the head. To Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's disciples, several individuals proffered what they considered well-intentioned suggestions for improving his performance. If he, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, would be just a little more sensitive to public opinion and more positive in his outlook, if he would look for the good in others and not grouse so much, and not be so insistent on always speaking the straight facts, then surely today no other religious leader would have as many supporters as he. If he did not forbid all kinds of intoxicants, then right now thousands would surrender to him. Just see the hypocrisy. What's the meaning of surrender if you're not prepared to give up that which is opposed to the principle of surrender? He could have been tremendously successful by adjusting to smarter practices and not introducing new ideas about Brahmanism. Actually, that theoretically that would be a fact. He could have preached Krishna consciousness and gone along with the smarter thing. At least to some extent, he didn't have to give threads to people from castes who are not usually who are not considered qualified for that. If he had at least orally endorsed groups that he instead chose to berate, the gurus thereof and their unlimited followers would have submitted to him as their universal head. Another common tactic of opponents unable to digest the raw truth presented by Srila Saraswati Thakur was to take exception with his mode of delivery. Oh, he doesn't say it nicely. Thus dodging discussion of his actual message. But Srila Saraswati Thakur was not to be inveigled by the apparent pragmatism of such self-serving cant. He knew that while among themselves such persons proclaimed loathing for everything he stood for, they feared to voice their opinions of the presence of even his junior disciples, lest they be philosophically demolished and exposed as the scapegraces they were. So rather than reconcile with those whose real intent was to continue with undisturbed sense enjoyment, he went on speaking the truth in a manner virtually guaranteed to invoke enmity, thus inviting upon himself untold troubles and inconveniences. Any questions? Comments? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada said that your love for me will be shown by how you keep this institution together after I've left. That's the more, it's closer to the quote than what you said.
So, they are speaking about speaking strongly.
They think speaking strongly works against the principle of cooperation. Yeah, well, obviously we have to take every single one of Srila Prabhupada's instructions have to be understood in relation to all the others. So when Srila Prabhupada said that your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate to keep this institution together, that doesn't cancel out the hundreds of instructions to speak strongly and clearly and oppose all the persons who are on principle opposed to the principles for which this institution was founded. If you say that's an opinion, that by speaking strongly that will affect the cooperation. Well, then we have to see on what platform Srila Prabhupada wanted the cooperation. The cooperation is on the platform of following the Acharya himself, the founder Acharya of ISKCON, on that platform. Otherwise, if you hold it together simply by, you get some book on psychology, on smile and be nice at each, I'm okay, you're okay, then it's not the institution that Srila Prabhupada set up. How to cooperate, we have to see on which principle Prabhupada said to cooperate. The problem is, Prabhupada tells us how to cooperate, and we take the word cooperate and redefine it according to some psychologist. We'll, instead of reading Prabhupada's books and instructions, we'll attend some course on cooperation and bonding and empathy, empathic listening and all this by non-devotees. Their definition of cooperation is I'm okay, you're okay. But as Srila Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada said, that is not our principle. Our principle is, I'm okay, you're not okay. So, cooperate, yes, but cooperate the way Srila Prabhupada told us to cooperate, not the way some social psychology says to cooperate. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, I've not come to this world as a contractor and a mason, just for building buildings. If there's a ISKCON is donated 2,000 acres of prime land on the, just outside Delhi, and a huge complex is made with the sign ISKCON in it, and the it's all in the name of it, registered in ISKCON society, and the main activities there are meat eating, gambling, intoxication, and illicit sex. Is that good? Is that what it should be? It's the institution. It comes legally in the name of ISKCON. But it's going against the principles for which ISKCON are founded. So there's no point to that. Yeah. Yeah, again, we have to see what are the boundaries. Yeah. What are the boundaries? Srila Prabhupada said that the ultimate managing authority is the GBC. The GBC members, he said they should all be acharya-like. So, now we'll perform Pushpanjali, the Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Pudra Bhaktistan Saraswati. Jai.